I'm Emma G. Rose.
I'm Shel Shearer. We're indie authors.
And this is Indie Book Talk. Hello and welcome back to Indie Book Talk. We are here today with Nicholas Poe, who is the author of Selection Day, book one in the Empty Night sci-fi series, and the co-host of Sound of History, a podcast that we will talk about in a bit. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so this is a huge deal, guys, that we have Nick here, because although we are an indie podcast and we talk about indie books, and Nick is an indie author, he has worked in the past for one of the big five publishers in marketing.
Yes, that is true.
So we're going to ask him a billion questions about this.
Okay. Hopefully I can be helpful.
We want to know everything.
Tell us all the dirty secrets. The really good secrets that actually sell books.
Oh, well.
What could we be doing better as indies that maybe the big five have figured out?
Having a lot more money for marketing budget helps.
That's what I've been doing wrong.
Yeah, that's...
Darn it.
That's the number one secret they're not telling you.
Yeah. Only I had a
fortune. I knew it was something like that.
Right. Yeah, I think... The advantage, I mean, obviously, other than money, that the Big Five has is also just like the relationships with bookstores and the whole network of distribution makes it easier to get books in front of people and get it on Amazon. Amazon's a huge thing that I think people in the indie space kind of realize, but just kind of like hitting it out the gate hard on Amazon will just skyrocket the book into where it needs to be. So I think that's a big tip too. I mean, that's Not anything people don't know. People know that.
So that brings up a question, because I'm getting ready to release. Do you feel, or in your experience, is it good to do a pre-release sale to get those numbers up on Amazon? Or you do not think that, or do you not know if that causes any difference in the initial sales?
I'm actually not sure. In my head, it would make sense to do that, but I can't like point to any, like I've done that and it works, but... Because like I know pre-orders help with the Amazon algorithm, so kind of getting that attention in the week up to release and week after really helps bolster it. So I think anything you can do to kind of drag that up at the beginning is huge.
I would tend to agree with that from my own experience too, because the one time of the times that I published on Amazon, the one time that I did do a pre-release, I felt like it did sort of carry me like more momentum longer. Whereas the times that I just sort of went, here's a book, it was a little bit...
Surprise!
I mean, it was a little more than that. I mean, people knew it was coming. But the times that it was like suddenly on Amazon, I think it did have a different effect, or a slower burn and less of that big spike, which can make a difference in the algorithm.
Sure.
Is there anything that you... And maybe this isn't impossible to answer, but is there anything that you... feel like you learned from like working in that bigger marketing space that you carried over into your own book and your own marketing practice?
I would say there's things that I learned that I should do that I'm not great at doing, and just like managing a social media presence, getting yourself out there. A lot of it is marketing yourself as much as marketing the book. And people are gonna, especially in the age of like book talk and BookTube and all of that fun stuff, it's kind of just about being out there and being on the platforms. And I am very bad at that, even though I work in digital marketing. So you would think I would be good at like managing social media, but I just don't enjoy it. So I'm not on it as much as I probably should be. But yeah, those are the lessons that I've learned and then like not followed. So hopefully other people will.
So do as he says, not as he does.
Right, exactly. Yes.
But you are here on our podcast,
yes.
And that's an outreach, right? That's a place. Is there anything that you learned that you do? Because I feel like you're being very self-deprecating here and being like, oh, I don't do any of it right.
Yeah, like my experience is largely in ads, like social media ads, digital ads. So it's kind of hard to do that on like a personal budget. I've done that for our podcast a little bit. Like I've done a few Facebook ads and I've taken what I've learned from how to do those into that. But yeah, I think just some of the Amazon stuff I mentioned a little bit earlier, I kind of like worked with my publisher to make sure that was ready to go, make sure we had a pre-order set up, and try to push it heavy and try to ask for reviews at that week one, the initial people who got the book, which in the indie world is generally people you know. They're going to be the first ones who are buying your book, so you feel a little bit better asking them to like review it on Goodreads and Amazon and all of that. So that kind of stuff. It's a lot more personal in the indie space, which is nice. So it helps.
So of the ads that you have tried, which do you find has been successful, not successful, worth the price? I mean,
sure. My main background is in Facebook and Instagram ads. So that's what I'm the best at. So I feel like I can generally do pretty well with those. But I think in terms of getting sales, Google ads generally work the best. Facebook ads, you can drive a lot of interest. You can have a pretty big reach with that. But on Google, you're going to hit customers who are, or potential customers who are like actively searching for what you are trying to give them. So that just helps you drive that conversion up. But it's going to be a little bit more expensive to get people to go to the page, but higher likelihood that they're going to convert once they're there.
So, okay. I 100% agree with all of that from like the intellectual standpoint.
Sure.
But like, how do you even target that? Because I feel like people, when they search for books, right, I feel like they go to Amazon or they go to the place that they buy books and that's where they're searching. So how are you catching them at the Google stage to bring them in to buy your book? Rather than like, I imagine that it would be like really competitive to target best sci-fi novel or something, yeah. Right? So yeah. How do you even do that?
It helps to get very niche. So plugging my own book, it's a sci-fi AI book. It's about an AI. So I would use those kind of as keywords. There might not be as many sci-fi books like that. Or even there's a customer base that specifically looks to support indie authors. So including indie or independent in your keywords, it's just, there's also good keyword generator tools you can use, and they kind of show you the search volume. And a general best practice is to not go to the high end unless you have $1 million, which I'm guessing most of us don't. Right. So kind of hit that like mid to lower range and use like broad match and just kind of make it easier for the people who aren't looking for a specific book. They're just, you know, I'd really like to read a sci-fi book right now. I wonder what's out there. Then they just Google sci-fi books and try and get your book out there.
Okay. I have to say I've actually done that before, so that makes sense. Like, I could be like, cozy mysteries with horses. There we go.
Yeah. That feels pretty niche. That's probably a good one, yeah.
Okay. This is cool because this is not the direction I thought we were going, and I like it. So, because Google Ads is not something that I feel like gets talked about a lot in indie spaces. We get a lot about, oh, well, maybe if you have money, you can advertise on Amazon, or if you have money, you might try to do like boost a post on Facebook or something. But I feel like Google feels like this black box to people.
It's just so large.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on where people could, and maybe you know all this stuff and so you don't have a good resource, but do you have any thoughts on like where people could look if they wanted to learn more about Google Ads and feel like they could, it wasn't such a black box?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the good news about it is that people who are good at running Google Ads are normally pretty good at search engine optimization as well. So the blogs are going to be like front page when you Google how to run Google ads, and a good one
that
like
makes sense.
Sprout Social, Hootsuite, those kind of companies have really good just bloggers who kind of write about it. There's another one that I'm blanking on. I just have like a bookmark bar on my work computer with all the blogs, so I don't have to pay attention to their names. I just click on it. But
exactly,
yeah.
That's what technology's for,
right? They're pretty readily available if you Google them.
So basically, if you want to learn about Google,
use Google.
Exactly.
Just Google it.
This is obvious. I don't know why you asked the question.
But the good news is the Amazon advertising platform is very similar to the Google one in terms of like how you set up campaigns. So if you're already doing the Amazon, it's kind of like it's a jump, but it's a pretty like easier jump into the Google Ads space.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to spend all of our time talking about ads, although I think we probably could. I also have another burning question, though.
Sure.
You mentioned your publisher a minute ago.
Yes.
We have established you used to work for the Big Five.
Still do currently, but yeah.
Okay, so you do?
Yes.
So, but your publisher is not.
It is not, no.
Of the Big Five. So who is your publisher is question one.
Right. De Novo Press. They are based out of Nashville, which is where I'm from. And they're small, independent, like relatively new. I think mine was the second full book that they actually published.
Wow. So,
okay. Yeah. It's been really interesting seeing the dichotomy of like Big Five publisher and then this like second book publisher. So.
So what made you go that route?
That's the burning question. Thank you.
Yeah. I think I was having a really hard time trying to break into the traditional publishing market as an author. And it's still a goal. Like, I would still like to get there. A lot of people are very happy indie publishing, and that's wonderful because it's a great space, and I hope it continues to grow. But my goal has always kind of been traditional publishing. And I never really thought about indie publishing, and I was just kind of like browsing, I think, Reddit, and I saw someone named De Novo Press comment about how they like had this idea and goal to try and publish these stories from debut authors who like are making great stories and are overlooked. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I clicked on their profile and found out they were in my hometown. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. So I bought the book that they had already published and ended up really enjoying it and think, okay, this might be like a good fit for the kind of stories that I like to tell. And just submitted a query to them, and then they reached out, and we've been working together.
I love that. Yeah. I love that coming together of the local community to create a book. That's so cool. Okay. You touched on that there are some differences mm-hmm. that you're seeing in how this works. So what are the ones that really kind of stuck out to you as like, ooh, that's not what I was expecting?
Sure. I think it's been a lot slower of a process than what I was maybe expecting, which makes sense. It's a small publisher. They have to do everything themselves. And also second book, they're kind of establishing their routines and their processes. So like, I'm used to things being very systematized and like this happens then, and then this happens, and then we get a cover and we do this, where it was kind of like a little bit more fluid, a little bit more flexible, which is nice because we could change things on the fly, which you can't do with the Big Five. So that was cool. And then having a lot more input into cover design and direction and the marketing copy on the back, and then like what kind of brand we wanted to build around it, having like input into that was really nice, which happens a little bit at the publisher, the big publisher level, but not quite to the same extent. And then I think just the community aspect is way different. I think with indie publishing, you have the opportunity to build a community and be very like hands-on with people who have read your book, which is really nice and really fun. With a big publisher, you kind of, the authors feel a little bit more like aloof and like, there's thousands of people who have read this, I can't talk to all of you. Whereas like, I feel like I probably could talk to everyone who's read my book, which is fun.
I'm pretty sure I have talked to everyone who's read my book. It's a goal. If you've ever read one of my books and we've never talked, send me an email. I will answer you.
So now that you've done the indie publishing, is your goal still to go to traditional publishing, or do you feel that this is more of a fit for you?
Yeah, I think I would, I don't know if it's possible, but I think ideally I would like to do a mix, because I do really love the indie aspect of it. But I also, I guess working in a Big Five publisher, I recognize that there are people who are better than me at certain things. And so like having to do everything myself, I know I'm going to drop the ball on some stuff. I know I'm not going to do something well that I should be doing. So being able to be with a Big Five that like has that capability and can push the story out more, I think that would be nice. So yeah, I think I would like to do a little bit of a mix if that's possible. I don't know if it is, but yeah.
Well, there's lots of companies out there that do kind of the heavy lifting for you on some of these things. So we've talked to many people that have done that, like a mix of the two. So definitely possible.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, it's always interesting, the people who have done different one. You know, we've talked to people who have done traditional and then have gone indie, and people who have started out sort of indie and then gone traditional and then come back. And we've seen a lot of different paths. I feel like there's almost no one. There's nothing that you can say, oh, no, there's absolutely no way you can do that. Right. If there's mix is always possible.
Yeah. Which is great fun. It's always nice to know.
Yeah. So the books that we're talking about here is the first book is Selection Day.
Yes.
We mentioned that was book one of the Empty Night series. So do you have, I assume there's at least a book two. How big is this series going to be? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's originally conceptualized as a trilogy. The second book I have written, it's with the publisher, so they're reviewing it. I'm sure there's going to be rewrites and edits and stuff. But yeah, so that one's finished. And then one more that I haven't started yet. And then maybe there will be like spinoffs or something, but I think the three will be like the main arc of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everybody has to buy Selection Day, read it, leave awesome reviews so that Nick can be one of those people who makes the jump to traditional publishing so that he can then report back to us on how that worked out and whether he really liked it. This is very self-serving. Help him
helps
to help us to help you. That's what I'm saying.
I'll take that deal. It sounds great to me. Yeah.
So you write sci-fi, at least this book is sci-fi, mm-hmm. but your podcast is called Sound of History.
Yes.
Explain to me how all of that connects or if it does.
It actually doesn't really connect at all. The podcast is kind of like a separate passion project. I get like, I've always loved podcasts and I've also always loved music history. So I was just kind of like,
music history. Okay.
Yeah. I was looking through like music history podcasts and there's a lot of really great ones that kind of go in depth into a band or a genre or an artist. But there wasn't one that I was looking for where it was just kind of like episodically through all of music history, almost like you were in a classroom. And I've always kind of had the attitude that if you really want to listen to or watch or read something and it doesn't exist, then make it. So I decided I might as well just make that podcast. But then I realized I probably wasn't interesting enough to just sit at a microphone and talk about music history and have people listen. So I brought in my wife, who doesn't know anything about music history and doesn't really care to know anything about music history. And I'm just kind of teaching it to her and seeing whatever
she likes it or not.
Right. Seeing whatever comments she makes. So, yeah.
I thought when I heard the name Sound of History, I really wanted it to be just like, this is the sound of a 1937 zipper, right? I think it's probably better that it's not that, but that was where my mind went at first. Like little
10-second episodes of Sound of it.
Yeah, like, you know, like those videos on YouTube that teach you how to pronounce words, right? It's like, this is the sound of glasses clinking together in a jazz club in 1920. Anyway, if people want to listen to your podcast that is absolutely not about random sounds from history, but is in fact a much more informative podcast about music theory and history, and or they want to read your books and promote this idea of making you just irresistible to traditional publishing houses.
Or they just want to chat with you.
Or they just want to chat with you and be of those people who have read your book and also talk to you. Absolutely. Where can they find you on the internets?
Sure. So the best place is my website, nicholaspoe.com, Poe like Edgar Allan, and also on Instagram.
Whoa, name dropping. Whoa.
My middle name is also Allen. So, you know.
Coincidence? You decide.
And then I'm on Instagram and Twitter at @NicholasPoe_ at the end of it. And then our podcast is Sound of History_ on Twitter is basically the only place we have an online presence.
Ours too. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
And even though he's failed to mention it, he has a cat.
Yes.
He does have a cat.
Wandered off somewhere.
Oh, darn it. There was your chance to see the cat.
Oh, he's on the chair.
You guys do not get to see the cat. Oh, wait.
I'm dragging him over here against his will.
That's how cats are. Either they want to be in your face or they don't want to be. Yay!
There
so
he
if
is.
You're watching on YouTube, you can see the cat. If you're not watching on YouTube, go watch on YouTube so you can see the cat.
His name's Ajax. He's very friendly.
Oh no! He just knocked over the microphone, in case you're wondering what just happened. So as we reset the microphone, we want to say hello, Ajax, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Nick, thank you for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.